Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep Sly'sOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from Sly'sOffice.com.
Welcome to another podcast at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the operating engineers, Local 139, and the law firm of Gingras, Thompson, and Walks. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. All right, so John, we have to start today with our U.S. Senator, our senior U.S. Senator, the class ring salesman from Mankato, Minnesota, who married a rich woman in Oshkosh, and the rest is history. Here he is with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press this past Sunday.
Asking to just confirm, are you investigating those leaks that Peter Strzok talked about in that text?
All right, Senator, I have no idea
that's a setup. It is entirely irrelevant to this point.
Why a Fox News conspiracy propaganda stuff is popping up on here, I have no idea.
I have no idea why we're going here.
Senator, this is underlying exactly why
President Trump is upset and why his supporters are upset at the news media.
Okay, this is not about the media. Senator Johnson, please. Can we please answer the question that I asked you instead of trying to make Donald Trump feel better here that you're not criticizing
him?
I'm just trying to ask you a simple question of what made you wince. I'm asking a simple question about you clearly were upset that somehow there was an implication that military aid was being frozen because the president wanted an investigation. Why did you wince?
Because I didn't want those connected. And I was supporting the aid, as is Senator Murphy, as is everybody that went to that initial inauguration. But here's the salient point of why I came forward. When I asked the president about that, he completely denied it. He adamantly denied it. He vehemently, angrily denied it. He said, I'd never do that. So that is the piece of the puzzle I'm here to report today, that unlike the narrative of the press, that President Trump wants to dig up dirt on his 2020 opponent, what he wants is an accounting of what happened in 2016. Who set him up? Did things spring from Ukraine? You know, there's a good piece we've got an oversight letter on from Politico in 2017, where let me quote the article.
All right, that is
wrong. Well, I thought maybe he was still searching for the article.
All right.
Just up front, before we go into the deep and thoughtful conversation as regards that amazing presentation, after he did that, and I did some talking about it on MSNBC and stuff, I wrote a tweet, and I'll read it to you in its entirety because you can do that. And I actually have it in front of me, unlike Ron Johnson searching for the article. On behalf of Wisconsin, I think it is reasonable to mention at this point that Ron Johnson was born in Minnesota. Okay? So, at this point, 5,263 people have liked that, and almost 900 people have retweeted it. So it's one of my very popular tweets. But I just want to note that there are 491 responses to it, I believe all from Minnesotans, saying that's not fair.
Oh, that is funny. Well, he proceeded, and Chuck Todd proceeded, obviously, in asking him whether he trusted the FBI or the CIA. He had three chances to say that he did, and he whiffed. Pretty remarkable. You realize his office, which is the same office that Russ Feingold had and the same office that Gaylord Nelson had, in the federal building on Wisconsin Avenue in Milwaukee, houses the FBI. He literally serves with them in a federal building.
Yeah. And I think there's really some sort of unfairness in that, you know, kind of like line of Senate, who held Senate seats, because I think it's pretty clear he should hold the McCarthy seat.
Well, is pretty funny, because, and I don't have the clip here, but Charlie Sykes compared him to Joe McCarthy this week. The man who recruited him to run for the Senate.
And I would argue, really, and I give Charlie credit for his journey, and I welcome people to the light. I mean, there's some history there, and you know, here's the thing about Ron Johnson.
He's dumb.
Well, there's a lot of things that we can say about Ron Johnson. Let's begin with the core concept of what we're dealing with right here. Sly, let me get you off your talking points to the. The essence of the thing. If you're in trouble and Ron Johnson is your chief defender, you are doomed. Because
Ron Johnson walked into this whole thing.
Good at this. What?
Let me just reiterate that he's dumb. All right. Now, and that's not a talking point. That is just.
I avoid that, and I'll tell you why I avoid it. You know, I've seen the U.S. Senate, and there's competition, brother. There really is. Some states are really trying hard, and I don't want to disappoint them.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There's actually a senator who was born in Wisconsin who now represents Idaho. Is pretty dumb, too. So
there's some Oklahomans that are very competitive. One good one, Doc.
Oh, there sure is. He's been in a long time, too. All right. So Ron Johnson speaks to the Wall Street Journal. Explain to me what's going on. He basically walked into this. He's blaming Chuck Todd, and he was ambushed and everything. But he walked into this.
No. They were, yeah. He was on there to discuss a incredibly consequential week as regards his statements past and current, right? I mean, he's at the center of this whole thing. Now, had I been an aide to Ron Johnson, I might have advised not going on Meet the Press this week, right? Because there's a pile of stuff that needs to be discussed about Ron Johnson. And, you know, going on with a, you know, capable interviewer to discuss that, for Ron Johnson, that's such a good thing because none of it looks good. And let's take the backstory real quick. It's very simple. Number one, Ron Johnson wrote a letter in 2016, I believe, signed by several other Republicans and a number of Democrats, which he sort of referenced in this thing with Chuck Todd. That letter was saying, you know, we really got to help Ukraine, right? You know, and one of the things we got to be concerned about is this prosecutor in Ukraine and their justice system in Ukraine, which is scorchingly, that's my word, corrupt, like, which is really a mess, and we've got to act on that. Well, the reason that letter is significant is because it's sort of exactly what they're saying Joe Biden was talking about, right? That prosecutor's a mess. So that letter became significant. When he was asked about it, Ron Johnson said, I signed a lot of letters. I don't really recall that one.
Oh,
right?
I bet he doesn't.
No, but here's the interesting thing about it. He was already being, I believe, if my timeline is right here, he's already being interviewed by, like, the Wall Street Journal and other people related to these issues. So you'd think these things would sort of be on his mind, right? That you'd ask, don't you think if you had signed a letter where you were kind of a lead player on a letter that raised concerns about central things to this inquiry, right? That you would at least maybe even look over your
what makes you think that he was paying attention to the details of
okay.
That?
So then that brings us to the Wall Street Journal piece, right? Because the Wall Street Journal piece, he says, as this guy who's written these letters and is really involved with these issues and really concerned, he hears from this, you know, Trump donor who they put into a sinecure as the ambassador to the EU.
Yeah, what does he have to do? How did he get involved with this?
He's Trump's fixer in Europe.
Ukraine's not part of the EU.
No, but this guy is Trump's fixer in Europe, right? He's sort of Trump's guy. He's a political guy. He's a big, major campaign donor who got a cool job that he gets to go around and fly around and see the capitals of Europe, right? You know? And the only mistake they made with him is that you're supposed to instruct those people, like, don't get into diplomacy, right? You know, don't mingle in that stuff. You're just supposed to cut ribbons and things. But he did mingle. He's talking to this other guy, a former McCain guy who's over in Ukraine trying to actually maybe stabilize things. And as we know, their conversations are the subject of those texts back and forth, which are very controversial. But Ron Johnson is talking about saying he heard some of this. He heard about this prospect that the president was pressuring Ukraine by withholding aid. And he was very, very concerned because he's very, very concerned about Ukraine. Give Ron Johnson credit for that. So he calls the president of the United States, and the president says, oh, I would never do that. And by the way, who told you exactly? You know what I mean? It's like by the way, I'm going to need to find right. where the leak is. And then Ron Johnson said in that interview with the Wall Street Journal, so once he told me he would never do that, I said, great, can I tell the president of Ukraine that he's going to get the aid? And Trump says, no, don't do that. That would upset our operation here. So now
Ron Johnson is adding an addendum to that. Okay. He's saying, well, Trump told me at the end of the conversation, you'll be happy with my decision. He's added that now.
There you go. You'll be happy with that, with my decision right after I get what I want.
Correct.
I guess the long-term play out of it. But then Ron Johnson says, and this is classic because I think it sums up Ron Johnson's entire Senate career. He says, I tried to get him to say we could tell the Ukrainian president we can release these aid or do something like that. And then the kicker, and this is summing up Ron Johnson's career, he said, I didn't succeed. So put all those pieces together.
So
you've got that's a hell of a lot to discuss.
Okay, so Friday night before Meet the Press on Sunday, Ron Johnson went on Here and Now. And here's what Ron Johnson said on Here and Now, which, of course, is a statewide TV on Wisconsin Public Television.
We've seen some subpoenas this past week, and we'll likely see
more. I apologize. This is from... This actually was recorded with the Upfront show that ran on Sunday morning.
I'm curious from your perspective whether you look at the State Department, lawmakers, or the White House. Should everyone cooperate with this investigation?
Well, first, it's important to state what an important concept executive privilege and keeping confidential conversations between the President of the United States and other foreign leaders is to just conducting governance and foreign policy. I think it's a real shame that what's happened here has resulted in the release of conversation between President Trump, President Zelensky. It's not good for President Zelensky, those kind of conversations, and any president does require advisors to be able to offer very candid advice, sometimes out-of-the-box thinking that really should not be made available to the public. So we really are hampering not only this president's, but future president's ability to do their job.
You know, by all accounts, from the whistleblower and everyone else, that call had no substance, no national security implications, mm-hmm. nothing.
No,
it was a shakedown.
Well, so this is the thing that I want to just put in the mix for you because I think it might be quite useful. Okay, if indeed you decide to quit the radio game and go back to Platteville, finish up. And then go to law school and become a lawyer. And then you become a lawyer for people who've gotten in trouble, perhaps for some RICO Act violations or, might be involved in, say, organized crime, okay? And you become a lawyer for those folks. This is going to be the most useful tip I ever give you. When you go in to defend your clients, you're going to want to say, they were engaged in out-of-the-box thinking.
Oh, my God.
Ron Johnson said, he's going, yeah, those phone calls, they involve some out-of-the-box.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I know what, the box that's there, that's the box where you put ethical, appropriate behavior.
Right.
And when you get out of that box, then you're where Donald Trump was.
So... Congresswoman Gwen Moore is now saying that the Democrats should essentially call Ron Johnson to testify.
I think they, no, I, this is a very, I wrote the piece for The Nation on this the other day, and And I didn't go quite to where Gwen's gone, but it's not inappropriate where she's gone at all, or Congresswoman Moore. Here's the interesting thing. I'm not sure how they avoid having him testify. I mean, but it's complicated because he's a juror, right? So that's the whole thing becomes very, very complicated. If indeed impeachment occurs, each senator effectively becomes a juror. But this is, if this ambassador, right, who now they're saying, and I actually think the reason the ambassador is not being allowed to testify, remember that, you know, kind of the last minute this week, they said, oh, he's not going to come testify. I think one of the reasons may well be the Johnson interview and some of the stuff with Johnson. Because if the ambassador is called to testify, one of the lines of questioning almost certainly will have to be, well, what did you tell Ron Johnson? Why did he, A, wince, and B, immediately or very quickly call the President of the United States concerned about things that you had said? Because it's clearly from that conversation, right? Now, the ambassador will say things if he, you know, rats Trump out and basically says, yep, did it all. He was clearly guilty. They don't need then in that case to call anybody else. But if it's a confused or incoherent attempt to continue a defense of Trump,
well,
then Johnson's statements become very, very significant.
Well, and you put the text involved there and the gap in the text when the texting stopped. And there's that long gap. And then when he comes back and he goes, oh, the president's not for quid pro quo. That's a pretty remarkable admission. All right, we'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at SliceOffice.com.
Hey, I want to welcome a new sponsor to SliceOffice.com. It's the attorneys at Gingras, Thompson, and Wachs. Whether it be personal injury, civil rights, employment, family law, medical malpractice, Social Security disability, or workers' compensation, they have an attorney for you who will meet with you individually and give you the time you deserve. They have offices in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. If you want to reach them, it's easy. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works. Computers that work for you.
Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also Jeff's Guitar Clinic, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation with us. So, comrade, I got some little gifts for you. This is Geraldo Rivera. Geraldo Rivera on with Sean Hannity the other day. Okay, you ready for this?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think this is supposed to be a compliment.
You know, if it wasn't your show, Sean, they would destroy him absolutely. You're the difference between Donald J. Trump and Richard Nixon. In Nixon's case, if he had someone that stuck up for him, he wouldn't have been, motivated to cover up that burglary.
That is really interesting. I hadn't heard that till right now, and I give you credit for catching that one. It is, we say, mining for gold. I don't think Geraldo is stupid.
No,
so that's a really interesting framing to throw in there.
He's just craven. Okay.
Craven, yeah, but no, but does that help Hannity or Trump?
You know,
to say that?
It doesn't, obviously, but, you know, in their minds, it just might. Because, you know, there are people that are still alive that think Nixon was wrong. Do you realize that?
If only we had saved Nixon, it would all be different, right?
All right.
Everything would be better.
Here is another one, and this is the second podcast in a row where we've had something with Joe DiGenova, okay? This is Joe DiGenova on the Laura Ingraham Show the other day.
What you're seeing is regicide. This is regicide by another name, fake impeachment. I refuse to call them whistleblowers. These two non-entities are suicide bombers that the Democrats have unleashed.
All right, so you heard that.
Okay, regicide. Had not heard that term before. It's evidently that's killing the king.
Yes. If you go and visit the Tower of London, you see some historic records of such, like, activity. activities and things like that usually ended up in the tower because you did it or didn't do it. But yeah, it's a, you're really going back to your medieval terminology now. And it's fascinating that this guy would choose a term from the language of monarchy, right? From the time of, you know, when we had kings and kaisers and all these people running around doing horrible things to defend Donald Trump, right? So you understand, he is employing the language of monarchy to defend Donald Trump. And what he seems to have missed is the 230 rough years there, where in the United States, we clearly defined ourselves with a constitution that did not permit monarchy, hereditary or even temporary, and also that established a power to guard against monarchical activities, right? You didn't have to have violent revolutions or, you know, like dragging people out of places or any of the horrors, frankly, of the monarchical time. We established impeachment as a formal process.
You understand he has the same MO as William Barr. It's the same sort of attitude. So
say anything.
Mike Pence, who's now wrapped up in this situation, interestingly enough.
President Trump.
This is Congressman Mike Pence in 2008.
This business of high crimes and misdemeanors goes to the question of whether or not the person serving as president of the United States put their own interests, their personal interests, ahead of public service.
That is Mike Pence describing Donald Trump to a T.
Yeah, and I was going to say, thank you, Mike Pence. That's exactly right. As a historian of impeachment, somebody's written books about it. I couldn't come up with a better. Yeah, he's right. Why they let him go out and say that?
Well, he said that in 2000. That's from 2008.
Oh, my apologies.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an outstanding
thing. Yeah, that's from 2008.
My error there.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that's a really good description of it.
Okay. This is from ABC.
This morning, the White House defiant. The Trump administration declaring in this 8-page letter to House Democrats that it will not cooperate with the impeachment inquiry, blasting it as baseless, dangerous, illegitimate, and unconstitutional. A lawyer for the president writing, because participating in this inquiry under the current unconstitutional posture would inflict lasting institutional harm on the executive branch and lasting damage to the separation of powers, you have left the president no choice. The move setting up a showdown between the White House and Congress. Overnight House Speaker Nancy Pelosi saying the White House letter is only the latest attempt to cover up his betrayal of our democracy and to insist that the president is above the law. Both sides now gearing up for a long fight.
The president can stonewall, but it's not going to change the outcome. It's actually most likely only going to increase the outcome of him being formally impeached by the House.
The only place I can think of where we had trials like this is in the Soviet Union. And that's what the Democrats are trying to do.
The White House letter came just hours after the State Department blocked a key witness from testifying, Ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland. President Trump said he would have loved Sondland to testify, but, quote, unfortunately, he would be testifying before a totally compromised kangaroo court. His Republican allies right there with him.
What we see in this impeachment is a kangaroo court, and Chairman Schiff is acting like a malicious Captain Kangaroo.
I didn't know the origins of kangaroo courts were the cap. You know, I watched Captain Kangaroo as a child. I don't know if you did, but Bunny Rabbit, Mr. Moose. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole bunch.
Who knew I was learning something about our justice system?
History.
Yeah.
I was watching it, you know, mainly for Bozo's Circus coming on. But, you know, I mean, all this stuff is good. As a reference point here, that conversation probably in the documentary on the Trump impeachment is going to be the opening, don't you think? I mean, here's the bottom line on what, why I think, A, Trump will be impeached, and B, impeachment will become increasingly popular. And this is sort of the sub-story of the moment.
Have you seen the Fox poll?
Every poll fly. Somebody, acquaintance of mine, you know, put up. Oh no, it wasn't. I was going to say, I was, when you say an acquaintance of mine, you're forgetting who it was, but I do remember who it was. It was Mark Pocan put up just a graphic with all the recent polls and then the amount of increase in support for impeachment. And it's why it's astronomical. We haven't seen shifts like this on an issue, right? And just, you know, pick your issue. I mean, outside of, you know, a handful of moments in American history, you're seeing double-digit increases in support for impeachment. And more importantly, because remember, in polling on impeachment, you got three levels, right? One is to support the inquiry. Support for the inquiry is, you know, through the roof right now. Number two is to support actual impeachment. The House doing it, that's now in a number of polls going over 50%. But here's the incredible thing, Sly. In the polls of the last few days, we have support for impeachment and removal from office, i.e. the Senate voting to get rid of him, going over 50%, or going into that 50% range.
And another number to consider, 66% of Americans think what he did in that phone call was wrong. The phone call that he says was beautiful. 66. You can't get 66. You can't get 66% of Americans to agree on anything.
Except for
other than that the NBA is supporting a evil regime in China.
Yeah, really bad.
What a bad week the NBA's had. So
no, actually, Sly, I'm going to tell you, if you're going to pick a week in which to do it,
it would have been this one.
Yeah, I haven't come out this week.
Yeah. Yeah, poor Adam Silver's caught in a pickle. All right, so now Donald Trump, of course, has created a huge problem in the Middle East. It's really quite remarkable. And when asked to defend turning his back on the Kurds, here's what he said yesterday at a press conference. He said this from the Oval Office.
The Kurds are fighting for their land, just so you understand. They're fighting for their land. And as somebody wrote in a very, very powerful article today, they didn't help us in the Second World War. They didn't help us with Normandy, as an example. In addition to that, we have spent tremendous amounts of money on helping the Kurds in terms of ammunition, in terms of weapons, in terms of money, in terms of pay. With all of that being said, we like the Kurds.
Mr. President, the Kurds helped the U.S. defeat ISIS. And by allowing this offensive, is it going to be more difficult in future times of need to develop alliances?
No, it won't be. It won't be at all. Alliances are very easy. But, you know, our alliances have taken advantage of us. If you look at how much money we spend on NATO and how much money countries from Europe, who are really a much bigger beneficiary than we are, okay, you know, they're there and we're here. We're many miles away. Our alliances, in many cases, have taken tremendous advantage of us. If you look at NATO...
Okay, and then one more clip here. This is him being asked about the ISIS prisoners being able to escape and flee.
What if some of these ISIS fighters escape and pose a threat elsewhere?
Well, they're going to be escaping to Europe. That's where they want to go. They want to go back to their homes.
Joining me now. That's a good answer.
Yeah, that's a winner, I guess.
He's really out on a limb on this one.
What, did you see that apparently, and I hope I've got this right, that there was suggestions, you know, who the very smart person who wrote the column was? Bert Lichter?
Who?
Yeah, I mean, I hope I've got that right. But it's like, it's he's not drawn from the best sources here on this stuff. But let's draw back and ponder the core of what he said, because I think there's a lot of people who may not know a lot about the Kurdish circumstance, and I'm not going to give their whole history. But you do realize why the country that the Kurds run didn't send troops to fight at Normandy?
Say that? Yeah, I'm listening.
It didn't exist.
Well,
Kurds are historically displaced people.
Right,
who
right.
Have been,
this
you
would
know,
be like saying the Palestinians didn't help. Right. No, I understand.
Right. Or it would be yeah. like saying any number of people in the world who have, you know, they have a place. They yeah. they have been in places for, you know, thousands of years, or for an immense amount of time. But they. This is one of the great challenges for the Kurds. They don't have, you know, a place where they govern themselves. except, intriguingly enough, for some of these war zones where the Kurds have, when they've gotten control, as frankly, you know, really, by all accounts, incredible soldiers, like certain groupings, they have had to develop great skills for organization and for soldiering. And so when they get control of the place, when they get control of the territory, they actually do, by most accounts, a remarkable job of organizing a governance, right, with education and healthcare and, you know, all sorts of cooperative activities. I mean, they're an incredible people, separate and aside from everything else that we're talking about here. And you can like things they've done or dislike things they've done. But the one thing that makes zero sense, I mean, literally, like, sub-zero, is to suggest, well, they weren't with us at Normandy. Yeah, they weren't because they weren't a country then. And I will also suggest, and I'm certainly not a good enough World War II historian to know this, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if Kurdish immigrants and Kurds were parts of, I'm sure they were parts of fights during World War II. And if we want to really explore the history of it, I'm going to bet, by and large, and again, I don't know the history well enough, but if you really want to explore it, I, you know, heck, I might go so far as to say that their service was more honorable than that of Donald Trump during Vietnam.
Going out a limb there. So the Canadians were part of the coalition at Normandy, and yet
you would remember that.
I would remember that very well. And yet the president put tariffs against their steel, saying that they were a that Canada was a national security threat. So that didn't help them. Well, it didn't.
No, why?
So if you're going to use the Normandy card.
Oh, you know, Sly, you've gone to a whole new and excellent place.
Well, I thank you. That's where I bring my Canadianism in.
You know, your Canadianism, I just want to say that's pretty impressive. You got someplace there. And I'm going to give you that, you know, on a really high level.
Okay.
Congrats.
As we do a little summation here today, where do you see this going? This impeachment, the impeachment. Not Normandy.
No, it's terrible. And you know, again, the fact that we're discussing, you know, who was on what side and who did what thing during World War II, it tells you that the answer to your question, quite frankly, where this thing is going is pretty easy, right? It's not hard at all. When that's what the President of the United States is throwing out as his defense, you know, and that's where he's headed, this is going all the way to impeachment. The House will impeach, I believe. I think they will do so relatively quickly, but not so quickly as some people imagine. I mean, there's some people who say, well, okay, this is getting off the rails. Why not just move immediately? There's reasons for that, right? You do want to conduct an inquiry that gets your information together to sustain your articles of impeachment, whichever ones you move forward on. That doesn't mean you have to get everything against the president, right? You don't have to throw it all at the wall in one shot. You have maybe two or three very well-drawn articles. You get the information together for that. You then have hearings on it, and you really do a backstory sort of investigation to make sure that if these are the articles that you vote for, if you vote for impeachment, that Trump doesn't then come forward with, you know, some piece of paper or some argument that challenges or raises questions about where you've gone. So there's a due diligence that is required. My sense is that is doable, completable by, November 1, probably.
All right.
Sometime early in November.
Pretty quick. All right.
I think, that's a month.
All right.
Almost a month.
We got to wrap things up.
I do think that from there it goes to the Senate.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for defending Canada.
Amen.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Thank you, Sly.